Drive Live, and we are here on Career Connect this afternoon. Shane Phillips is here from the Phillips Group. Shane, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
You are back, and we are pleased that you're here. Stuart Walker is here, partner at Afridi and Angel Legal Consultant. Stuart, nice to see you as well.
Good afternoon.
So what we want to do is start off with, because Ramadan is fast approaching, let's just look at working hours that are reduced during Ramadan. And I wanted to get your legal perspective on this, Stuart. Working hours are reduced, but in terms of the law, what should happen, first of all?
The law is very, very clear on this. There's really no ambiguity at all. Normal working hours are 8 hours a day. They're reduced by 2 hours during Ramadan for everyone.
Okay, and this doesn't just apply to Muslim employees. If you are Muslim, it is six, and it applies across the board.
Across the board, whether you're fasting, whether you're Muslim, across the board.
Okay.
And can it be any 2 hours that you reduce somebody's working day by? It doesn't have to be, you know, at the latter part of the afternoon. Because obviously some industries, you can't just leave work at 3 o'clock or whatever it is, because they're still, well, I'm thinking of us. I mean, we'll be here broadcasting, right? So,
maybe not the greatest broadcasters in the world, but they
But you know what I mean? They don't have to be at a set time. Is that right?
The labour law doesn't say which 2 hours come out. It just says the normal working days reduced by two. So if you end up working eight during Ramadan, you should be getting paid 2 hours overtime.
Okay, which brings up an issue, actually, and it's an interesting issue. And Shane, this is something you were pointing out just before we came on the air. If you think about Ramadan from the networking perspective, there's a great deal of associations that you can build up at iftar parties, sahurs, etc. It's very easy to go over the top in terms of the number of hours worked because the opportunities are there to do so later in the evening, aren't they?
Yeah, I would argue at a senior executive level, many people may end up working more hours during Ramadan, especially, so for example, if you're the CEO of a bank, you will have unlimited number of iftars, suhoors that you will have to attend, often working until 2 in the morning. Also, if you're working with senior individuals who are celebrating Ramadan, they will often have their iftar and suhoor, and then they will start working. So right now, for example, the client, we're booking meetings at 11 o'clock and midnight during Ramadan. So I think just maybe the way the working hours work out may shift at the senior level. Maybe at the more junior level, you may definitely get a break. And if you're not, so that's what I think.
So it's really up to companies to find a way to make that work for all the different levels of their employees. But what happens if they're not? What can somebody do?
I think it's worth pointing out quickly, because Shane makes a good point about the senior people working probably harder during Ramadan, that obviously managerial supervisory grade individuals are not entitled to overtime payments anyway, so that they're outside the scope of extra pay. But if people are not being given the reduced working hours during Ramadan and not being paid overtime, then they have grounds for lodging a complaint with the minister.
Okay, so the law is very clear in that regard. Ramadan, very, very fast approaching. If you have a question for Stuart, Stuart Walker is from Afridi and Angel. You can get in touch with us on 4001. Legal advice for the next 45 minutes or so. And we're also, usual numbers apply there, by the way, text number and via the app as well, or 423-1010, the phone number. We're also, in a few minutes, going to be talking about underperforming employees. I'm looking forward to your example that you sent through today, Shane, here, which involves the use of the word widget. So we'll run through the example, but it is a clever example, and it is something that so many of us, I suppose, are kind of overburdened with at work, the thought that we're doing probably perhaps more than we should on some occasions and other people don't pull their weight. So that's the topic this afternoon. Thoughts on that as well on 4001 or via the free app or 423-1010 to get involved in the conversation on Career Connect.
This is Drive Live
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are talking human resources and employment and underperformance and whatever else you want to bring up on the text 4001 via the free app, or you can call in if you like on 423-1010.
Career Connect.
That's what we're doing this afternoon. Stuart Walker is here from Afridi and Angel, answering legal questions and generally being involved in the conversation. Stuart, nice to have you here. And also Shane Phillips is here from the Phillips Group. We wanted to talk to you today about this main topic. You can do whatever you like with your arms, Shane, I don't mind. So look, Give me a widget example. The underperformance correlation will become clear if you run through this, I think.
Well, I think a lot of people, they believe in coaching and mentoring, and so when they have an underperformer, especially in this region, we're very slow to pull the trigger on a termination. Yeah. And so when you look at, say, you, for example, if you had a widget, your company makes widgets, and an average person can make 20 widgets, and underperformers making 10, then you need to coach them. Usually you take your top performer is the one who's responsible for coaching and mentoring people and showing people how to do the job because they're the best at the job. Mm. So now you take a guy who's making 20 widgets and say now he's only making 8 or he's only making 16 because he's coaching someone. So now instead of just having one person only working under capacity, you now have 2. So overall, you reduce the competitiveness of your organization. In a simple terms, the best way is if you look at war. If you deal with a veteran soldier and he's on the battlefield, he actually has someone in his sights. He will not shoot to kill that person. He would prefer to shoot to injure the individual. Because when the person's injured, instead of taking one person off the battlefield, 2 more people have to go and pick that guy up.
Okay.
And who's the one who's going to pick him up? Usually your best, most courageous, strongest warrior. So in fact, instead of taking one person out with one bullet, you now take out 3. The same thing applies when you're dealing with underperformance and you do not remove the underperformers from the organization quickly enough.
Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind is, all right, so you use your best performer to coach people because they know how to do it better than anybody else, and they then go in and coach the underperformer. That's fine. But for a lot of people, it is, well, at least we've got a coaching thing in place, and at least we've got somebody who can make some widgets, rather than having to terminate somebody and then find somebody else and train them up to become a widget maker and a performer of a widget maker.
Well, this is the biggest fallacy of business, is that we take our best people and put them on our biggest problems. What you should be doing is taking your best people and putting them on your biggest opportunities. And that's how you're going to grow and develop the organization. And so you have to balance that out. Now, if you're going to be that organization that is really going to tolerate this underperformance and create structures to enable it and to support it, then you'll just have to live with the fact that you're not necessarily going to be an overly competitive organization. And some organizations have protective clauses. For example, we're the only one who can sell blue widgets in this region. Mm-hmm. In that sense, then you have a much larger cushion to afford that. And I think historically, a lot of organizations have had monopolies or they've enjoyed these concessions. As the market becomes more efficient, as it becomes more mature, these protectionist clauses are getting eroded, markets are becoming much more competitive, and there's going to be a much less tolerance for the underperformer. And we're seeing that. Layoffs in the last 24 months have been a common theme.
I mean, I can totally see why you've got to look at the cost implications to your business if somebody's underperforming. I also agree with you. I think people here tend to not want to pull the trigger very quickly because of all the rules and regulations around it. However, it does sound a bit harsh to say that you shouldn't waste any time mentoring somebody. Isn't it partly a company's responsibility to develop and help train their staff if they're not if they need help in some areas, at least in the first instance? I mean, if they're consistently underperforming, yes, but it seems a bit harsh to say just get rid of them straight away.
Yeah, well, this is a good point. A lot of the organizations are not equipped to do performance management because the organization itself, in order to do effective performance management, you have to have a very clear vision. You have to have a very clear strategy. The strategy then has to be produced into tactical objectives that the employees can action. Now, those objectives can shift. So, for example, lots of times, right now, we're in a moment where we're facing a lot of challenges to the current paradigms of thought around how business should be run. So if you take marketing, for example, traditional marketing is losing its foothold. Print marketing is just not as effective as digital marketing is. But right now, if you look at a marketing budget, it may be 5%, 10% of that marketing budget may be for digital. Now, for an organization to say we're going to be completely digitally competitive means you have to completely shift the vision for the organization. Knock out that 90% of that budget where it was being spent and shift it to somewhere else. So as someone who's underperforming in the marketing department has a lot of leeway because it actually goes all the way up to the board where they really have to make these much larger decisions and they have to be very decisive on what kind of organization are we building, what's the organization going to look like in 5 or 10 years. And lots of boards in the region, they can't answer those questions. So it trickles down and then you can't have an effective performance management if you can't say, look, this is where we are in 5 years, this is where we're going to be. And either you're part of that vision or you're not.
Okay, but if companies want to be successful, they in the main seem to want to take a long-term vision. You want to have happy staff. We are all about happiness these days, of course. And you can see, well, I know you're not, Shane, but you're not like most people. However, it is important to have people who want to come to work because people who want to come to work clearly are going to be more productive at work. Let me just ask Stuart quickly. Give us your thoughts, Stuart. When you have a new young, fresh, wet behind the ears lawyer who comes into the office, I'm guessing you're not going to haze them, you're going to encourage them.
Absolutely. And this is a fairly unique jurisdiction in that most of the lawyers coming here will not have trained or qualified in this country. So they come to us knowing nothing about local law and we have to get them up to speed in a relatively short period of time. And we say to them, we will be writing off your time for a long time. For 6 months, say, you will take twice as long to do a task as some of the more experienced lawyers, but that's okay. Whereas if that was back in London, you know, that would not be okay.
Sure.
So you write off time for a while to get them up to speed, and then it's now you've got to perform. And if you're not performing, then we're going to have that conversation.
Okay, we're going to talk more about performance in a minute. Shane, you've got your hand up. It's okay. We're going to come back to you in a minute to talk on. Simmer down slightly. Shane Phillips is here from the Phillips Group. We're talking about underperformance in the workplace, the underperforming employee, and how much they effectively end up costing a company, not to mention the wear and tear on colleagues as well, I suppose. Also, Stuart Walker, you heard just there. Stuart's a partner at Afridi & Angel Legal Consultants. If you have a legal question, not just to do with underperformance, but also to do with anything in particular, perhaps in your employment contract or something you're facing at work at the moment, Stuart can answer those questions as well. Well, they are here until 5 o'clock.
No matter your preferred communication, stay in touch with Drive Live, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
On Career Connect this afternoon, we have been considering what underperformers cost. We're going to come back to that in a couple of moments.
Career Connect.
Two guests are with us today, as ever. Shane Phillips is here from the Phillips Group, and also Stuart Walker is here from Afridi & Angel Legal Consultants. Sally has been on the phone talking to somebody who got in touch with the question. Understandably, maybe doesn't want to come on and ask the question directly to Stuart, but you were talking to this person.
Yeah, so a lady came on the phone, and she said that she got a redundancy letter just yesterday, and so she's been offered just 1 month's pay. She's been working at this particular company for a year and a month on an unlimited contract. So she's asking, is there anything else she can do? Is 1 month's pay enough? Is that what she should be getting?
Well, her contract of employment should have a notice period, so she should be given at least that notice period. The concept of redundancy is not present in local legislation, so simply giving someone a letter saying you're redundant has no meaning in this jurisdiction. When we advise employers on this issue, if they want to get rid of someone and they sometimes say we will dress it up as a redundancy, we say no, you have to give a valid reason in writing in the termination letter. And there are a variety of reasons that will be held to be valid, but redundancy on its own doesn't mean anything.
But what if it's literally the business is contracting and they need to reorganize it and it's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with the individual, but you just can't afford to keep them anymore?
Yeah, that's a valid reason, but you have to say that.
So you say reorganization?
Yeah, for business reasons. Any sort of formulation along those lines will be held to be valid, unless the employee can present evidence that really the reason he's been terminated is because he supports a different football team to his manager, and that's the
valid grounds.
No, that's not valid.
If clearly stated.
Depends on the football team, I think, Shane.
The reason doesn't affect the amount of pay that you should get. That will be down to what's in the contract and the notice period,
you
will
should
it?
Be paid. Well, you should be given, you should be allowed to work your notice period. Most people will often want to work during that period because they get the health insurance, they have their residency while they look for another job. In some circumstances, you will agree to work to forego your notice period in return for payment of what you would have earned during that time.
Okay, Stuart Walker's answering the legal questions today, and in some cases asking them, I suppose, as well. He's with us until 5 o'clock. He's from Freudian Angel. If you have a question for Stuart, get in touch with us. We're also talking about underperformers and what they cost that person in the office that everybody thinks wish they'd do a bit more work, wish they'd pull their weight. It's something that perhaps we don't deal with as well as we should. Shane Phillips, that's what you put forward earlier on. But at what point should a manager move to termination if somebody just isn't up to the task? It's not as easy to get rid of people, if that's even the right phrase to use, as perhaps it could or should be. But when should you do it?
Well, I think, first of all, one of the things that people overlook is the engagement level of the individual. And if the individual does not see themselves being in the organization in 4 or 5 years, I think right away you need to start weeding people out. Sometimes you may even have a top performer. In 12, 24 months, he's not going to be with you anymore. Maybe you should start pruning those people out as well. You should start looking at engagement, who's going to be loyal to the organization. Secondly, then I think you should really have clear performance measures. People who aren't pulling the weight, you need to start getting them out of the organization, because not only are they doing a disservice to the company, you're also robbing a career of anyone who's working underneath an underperformer. I mean, if you're a top performer and you're stuck under somebody who's coming late, leaving early, doesn't really care about the job, has no value for the profession, is themselves planning to be gone in 12 months from now, anyone who's working under that individual is also being robbed of a career. And the person who's now on top of that individual who doesn't have the authority to fire them, they're being robbed of a career, because now instead of moving on with the opportunities in the market, they're dealing with internal issues all day. And so you know, that one underperformer will be affecting 3, 4, 5 people within the company. And that is a crime. You know, that should be chargeable to somebody. I don't know who, but we'll find out later. But so you should not keep in a lot of times in this region, they feel like, you know, it's not the right thing. You're doing someone a great favor by terminating them, because that job is not a fit for them. You're giving them the freedom to go and find what it is that they were made to do.
And most people who are fired don't feel that way, Shane. Let's be honest.
Lots of people feel that way. I mean, you look at Amos Famous Cookies. You know, that's a cookie company. That guy who made that company was working in Sony Entertainment.
Good for Amos, but I mean, honestly.
But we wouldn't have those cookies if we didn't leave.
If the boss came down to me and said, right now, look, I don't think you're measuring up. It's just not working.
You wouldn't see it as a gift, Tim.
I'm not sure that would be a gift.
Oh, I'm sure you'd have a time of your life this weekend if that happened.
It may. I mean, the point is, it would, possibly. It may turn out in the long run to be better, but that's not how people see it. I mean, the point is, actually, look, this is a hard situation. Termination is hard to do, hard to take.
Well, that's what being a leader is about, is that person may not have the courage to cut themselves free of that security blanket that the job is giving them and follow their passions. You as the leader need to recognize and get people in the right positions in the right places, and you need to be able to see the bigger picture. And doing the right thing is saying, look, you know, it might even be to my benefit to keep you on for some whatever reason, but this is not a fit for you. You need to go and chase your passion. And then cutting that person loose is the right thing to do. And it's the courageous thing to do. And it's the tough thing to do. And it's the unpopular thing to do. And leaders who go along to get along get stuck in this doing themselves a disservice, doing the organization a disservice. And most of all, you're doing the underperformer themselves a disservice.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. Do you agree? 4001 if you'd like to have your say on what Shane's saying. Somebody's messaged in this, Shane, and it is quite an interesting point. Unfortunately, in this market, there is no loyalty to companies. We bring freshers who know nothing practically and train them. The moment they feel they know something, they then move on to another place. The labour law does not allow companies easily to hire someone on a temporary basis as a trial period, so companies end up paying a lot of money to hire someone who lied on his or her CV, and then these employees become a burden and it's hard to let them go. I mean, a lot of stuff covered in that message. And you're actually shaking your head there, Stuart. Is that not true then? But basically they're saying we can't hire temporarily. But isn't that what the probation period is for?
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, you can have up to 6 months as a probation period and you can get rid of someone without any notice during that period if they're not working out.
Does that sound like an excuse to you then, Shane? For not wanting to act tough enough as a boss?
Well, he's got 2 points there. I mean, the one I totally agree with Stuart. You have 6 months. If you can't tell whether someone's given 6 months, then you shouldn't be a leader. And the other point is that people aren't loyal to corporations is not true. This is what bad managers say. You know, people, human beings are naturally loyal. We're naturally tribal. Wherever you go all over the world, people group together, you know. You've never seen a country where it's like there's no tribes, no groups. Everyone's just on their own out for themselves. That doesn't exist because humans are naturally loyal. What happens is people come into an organization, they're treated unfairly, things that are promised to them aren't delivered on, and there's so many other reasons that can go on, but the unloyalty factor is being created by the managers and by the organizations themselves.
Mm, and possibly by having to be frustrated at working alongside other underperformers maybe could be one of the reasons people want to get out. Very quickly on the probation issue, Stuart, a question coming in as we're talking about it saying, if you're not given permanent employment at the end of your probation due to a verbal stating of performance issues, can you ask to see the basis or the reasoning for that? That's from Steve. Thank you for that, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, it's a normal termination. Even though it's in the probation, it is a normal termination, and you should be given written reasons for the reason for the termination.
Here's another text in, just quickly here. I have a friend who works for a private company, has to work overtime, isn't being paid for those hours. We haven't seen the contract, but the question is, strictly speaking, is this legal? I mean, clearly not.
Unless he's in a managerial or supervisory position, in which case no overtime is due.
Okay.
Can I just talk on that loyalty factor? I mean, we live in a time where you say, look at Wikipedia. They have trained professionals working for free. You look at Doctors Without Borders. You have highly paid American doctors who forfeit their pay to risk their life and limb and in horrible conditions for the mission and purpose of the organization. So loyalty on extreme levels, you look at Linux. It's a totally open system created by professionals for free. So with zero pay, you can create an organization and a movement with 100% loyalty to the point where people are willing to die for the vision and mission of the organization. And so an organization where you're paying money, paying benefits, and you have a great market position and you're still not able to generate loyalty, you have a major leadership issue.
AJ says, I agree 1,000,000% with Shane, so someone loves you. And Abdi says, what about when you have a colleague who's always after, always has problems, but you're not a problem maker? How do you handle that without making any problems?
Sorry, you have someone who's always
a colleague who's always got problems or creating problems, but you're not a problem maker. So how do you handle that without making a problem?
Well, you need to terminate people who are creating problems. That's
but what if he did?
Get them out. That's clear. It's just his one answer tonight. Axe them.
Axe them, yeah. And if someone's being a bully, sometimes you need to be aggressive. You need to come in and draw the line in the sand and then also bring visibility to it. Say, look, I think what you're doing is inappropriate and I think you should apologize and you should call them on the behavior and then hold them accountable to it and then bring visibility to it and say, look, this person is not a productive person of our team. And of course, it's not my one answer. If somebody is creating problems, you need people out. Someone who's just aggregating problems and bringing them, you need to get rid of them. You need people who are taking initiative, who are delivering solutions and are delivering results. Those are the kind of people we need.
What if they sell more than anybody else in an organization but everybody hates them? What do you do then if they are your top sales performer? Well, you need that person.
I can guarantee you if a guy sells or a lady sells more than anyone else in the organization, other people are going to hate them. And in fact, when you're assessing an individual, and a top performer will have mixed reviews. You know, someone who's driving very, very strong, unusual results, and I mean this is someone who's an outlier, and you know, if someone's doing 10 widgets, this person's doing 50. a lot of people will hate that individual. That is absolutely normal. Now, if the person is being hated because their behavior is outside of what values and ethics and morals we feel is correct, then you have someone like a Hitler who had great results, but, you know, he was killing people on the way to achieve them. You know, obviously that is an issue. So if someone's acting in an illegal fashion or immoral fashion, then of course, again, they should be terminated.
Okay, let me just put this to you, Stuart, and this goes back to your example of people who do things because it's the right thing to do for no pay, for example. Best example of loyalty is Stuart. You work to run a school for no money. You just want to contribute to society. This is Omar texting in, who clearly knows you. But what makes you want to make that contribution? Plus, it's also a pat on the back for you.
Well, that's very kind of Omar, thank you. But I serve on one of the board of governors of one of the not-for-profit school groups here in Dubai. It is a school that all three of my children have passed through. So even though I pay the school fees, I feel some sort of indebtedness towards the organization. It's also a chance to work with some very qualified individuals on that board, skilled, committed people that are fun to hang out with. So that in itself is its own reward. Pay doesn't need to be part of it.
Shane?
Well, I think that organizations need to address this rather than managers saying, oh, Dubai is transitory and oh, I have this high attrition rate. No, they should be held accountable. You know, if you're a leader and you have 90% attrition rate or 50% or 25% attrition rate, you know, you should be held accountable to that. And I firmly believe that people do not like switching jobs. People do not like moving countries. People do not like going through interview process. They're being forced to leave.
We're going to come back to talk more about this in a few moments' time. There are lots of texts in here. Loyalty on the company's part is something that we'll talk about in a few moments' time. We're talking about, well, strictly speaking, we were talking underperformance. We've moved on in the conversation slightly, but there is still a chance to talk about that. 4001, the free app, or 43 1010, plus legal questions to Stuart Walker from A Freudian Angel.
We want to hear from you. Find us on Facebook. Tweet at Dubai I 1038 FM.
Drive Live, just coming up 526.
Career Connect.
Quite a few messages coming in, Tim, for the guys in the studio. We've got Shane Phillips with us, of course, and Stuart Walker. Shane, somebody would like to hear from your colleagues next week talking about you and see what they come up with. But we won't get you to talk about that one now. That's one message that's come in. Also, another one saying, hello, guys. I think well-established career paths can take a lot of... can take care of a lot of issues. Employees are stranded as there are no clear career planning in most organisations here. That's my personal opinion. So again, sort of saying people, companies aren't living up to their responsibilities, as you touched on, Shane, in some cases. And this one, what about the loyalty on a company's part? A lot of people may perform well and spend a considerable amount of time with a company, but still get overlooked at the time of promotion. So I guess, Shane, talking about the fact that loyalty goes in both directions, the company should be loyal too.
Yeah, there's a lot of different issues there that you're touching on, but I guess just the last one, people can work very hard, be very loyal, and never get promoted. And that's part of the individual career management and managing your career effectively. This is where you're failing. Results alone won't get you to the top. You know, you need to have the right relationships. You need to have the right level of visibility. There's so many other different things that you need to be doing. And when you go back and you look on the organizational side, you know, there's so many examples which we already talked about where organizations are able to get someone to risk their life or be committed to death for the mission. If the organization is not using the full toolkit to empower people, then they will be failing. So one of the big things now is creating employee ownership or getting your staff to feel and be like owners. So how do you do that? You have to empower them to create, you know, let them design their workflow process, let them design their workspace, let them pick their working flexi hours, and so on. And so there's a lot of things that organizations can do to drive that employee ownership, which they're not doing. So, and those examples where we're saying, look, Linux was made for free, or so many of these programs are made for free, is proof that the incentive, benefit, reward programs and motivation and programs that we are currently using are archaic, they're blunt and ineffective.
So we need change in the workplace is really what you're advocating. We need a new broom, effectively. We need to sweep it clean.
Yeah, I think when you look at historically what has been the language of business, it's been accounting, it's been economics, it's been strategy. So when a CEO approaches their board, they're speaking one of these three languages. All three of these languages fail to deal effectively with the most important element of your business, which is the human element. So as we move in the 21st century, one of the biggest changes we'll see, or one of the predictions, is that you will see the rise of industrial psychology as becoming one of the forefront languages of business, and that CEOs and boards will start to use this language to address their business issues.
Shane Phillips is from the Phillips Group. There's a legal question in for you, Stuart Walker from Afridi and Angel, on notice periods. If an employee gives a shorter notice period, say 1.5 months instead of 2 months, for example, if that was what was stated in the contract, what happens?
So this is where the employee is giving short notice.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what would happen in practice is that the employee would be due to receive an end of service gratuity payment. You would deduct a sum out of the end of service gratuity to cover the, so if they're short 2 weeks, mm-hmm. you take 2 weeks' pay off the gratuity payment.
Okay, that's the answer. Thank you for the text in there. I didn't put the person's name on that, just in case. Final question for both of you, actually. I just wanted a perspective here. It's an interesting question, this. Let's see what how this goes. Shane, I'm going to start with you. Is it a negative signal if I want to find a job after being self-employed here for 2 years? Anything negative that you can see there?
Yes, it's absolutely. Once you cross in from into becoming an employer, to make the jump back to employee is very difficult. The first thing they'll be saying is, you know, you had some issues, you just want to get back on, you know, have a job to get back on your feet, and you're obviously most likely going to be taking a job in the same field, so they're going to see you as a competitor. It's going to be extremely difficult for you to make that jump back into the employee role.
Okay, Stuart?
Yeah, I totally agree with Shane. If we were looking at a candidate like that, although self-employed lawyers don't really exist in this country as such, but if they did, we would not touch them. It would be too much of a risk.
Not touch them. There yeah. you go.
They're harsh tonight, these two, aren't they? Really?
Got a lot of agreement with Shane wow. tonight. I'm ever so slightly concerned. Do you know what? Shane Phillips, lovely to see you. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And also Stuart Walker from Afridi and Angel. Nice to see
Thank you,
Stuart.
Very much.
Thank you.